The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Welcome to Your Money with David Hayes. This is Doug Hughes live in studio. Have an exciting show for you today. We're going to be hearing from Josh Norris. He's going to be talking about Medicare. We're going to be joined by Wayne Thacker to talk to us about Social Security planning. And then also we're going to have a good check-in with Rod Holloway to talk about the markets. But before we get to that, a couple of items from By the Numbers. We always find this a really interesting set of data points as we look through the week of finance. Are You Really Hungry? A food price index that measures the change in food prices internationally was up 19.6% on a year-over-year basis as of January 31, 2022. And Rob, I can tell you that's true. We go out to eat and everywhere you go is just a little bit more expensive. A lot more in than out for every $1 of goods that U.S. companies export to Chinese buyers in 2021, American consumers imported $3.35 worth of goods from Chinese manufacturers. How we live. Of the 8.8 million U.S. households created in the 5 years ending 12/31/21, 90% were owner households, while 10% were renter households. Owner households grew by 7.9% to 83.5 million, while renter households grew by 914,000 to 44 million. So people are buying houses. Here's an interesting one. As a part of a 10-year budget projection made by the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, a group that is always quoted and frequently quoted during campaigns. They did a 10-year budget projection back in January of 2012, 10 years ago, that our national debt, which was $15.2 trillion, was forecasted to reach $21.6 trillion as of 9/30 of 2022, so looking into the future, but our actual debt as of February 10th, 2022 is $30 trillion. So we were way off on the projection of what debt may look like out there. Dream home. A ground was broken in the United States on the construction of 111,600 single-family homes in June of 2021, the largest total nationwide since September of 2006. 1.12 housing starts in all of the calendar 2021 was the largest reported since the year 2006, which is why you are beginning and feeling the pressure. If you're going to build, to see the price that's going to be, and you're feeling the pressure on whether I should sell my house and find something else, or if you sold your house right now, what could you buy? But a lot of new homes that are being built and constructed, those numbers are up. One last thing, I think all of us watched the Super Bowl. What a great game. It was an exciting game. But Super Bowl 56 was a Super Bowl of the youth movement. Yesterday's football matchup, which would have been Sunday night, so actually Sunday night's matchup, the underdog Bengals and the favorite Rams, was the first Super Bowl in history to feature head coaches who were both under the age of 40. The Bengals' Zach Taylor is 38, while the Rams' Sean McVay is a mere 36 years old. This is Your Money with David Hayes. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. This is Doug Hughes live in studio. Your Money with David Hayes is brought to you by Kenny Bland's Auctions, your full-service auction service offering pre-planning the sale of your estate or real estate, visit them online at kennyblandauctions.com. One of the things that we cover quite a bit in the class that we do at Ivy Tech, which, by the way, is coming back up in March, which is retirement planning today, is we talk about the new view and the traditional view of retirement planning. The traditional view, people would go to work, they work at the same place for two, three, four decades, and they'd walk out with a pension, Social Security, and a very predictable retirement. All that began to change in the 1970s when we went to contributory plans such as 401ks, 403bs, different instruments like that that have been offered through employers. And one of the things that also changed with that significant change in how you plan and how you prepare for your retirement and the responsibility which has now been pushed onto all of us is the long-term conversation about your estate. What happens at your passing or you or your spouse's passing? What do these conversations look like? And there's just a couple of things that we would like to point out that you should be looking at, you should be thinking about. During this time when you're retired, and oftentimes people are going to be retired for 20 or 25 years, you have to do a lot of planning around the triggers of life, which is going to be the birth of grandchildren, potentially could be a divorce, could be inheritances. So you need to be making sure that you're really listening and adjusting your financial plan about some family changes. Who are the characters who are on the stage? Who's here? Who's involved? And how do we want them to receive assets? And how do we want to gift to them? The next would be family goals. What things does the family want to make sure that it gets done before one or both people are not able to do things? Often this drops into the category of a trip or some kind of a family gathering that people would all like to do. Maybe the patriarch or the matriarch of the family own a business. And what does that look like? Will that business be transferred to the next generation or will the business be sold? What happens, and this is a big one, what happens when health begins to change? Who are the people that need to be trusted in? Who should be the confidants? Who should be talked to? And are they already connected to your financial professionals? Are they already connected to your attorney? These are things that you need to be aware of since this responsibility of retirement planning has been pushed onto our shoulders. It's not so much as just changing a pension election form anymore. Now it's all about beneficiaries. It's all about power of attorney. It's all about allocation changes. And these are things that when we sit down and talk with people, we see people thinking a little bit more clearly, not just about what the markets are doing or what the price of gold is or is Russia going to invade Ukraine or what about inflation or what about the S&P or should I buy index funds or should I buy actively managed funds? The bigger question is, what does my financial profile look like? What does my plan look like? Not just what do my investments look like? And so listing things like family changes and family goals and business planning, retirement planning, when you're going to retire. One of the biggest ones that we see where the changes come kind of rapidly is in health changes. What if someone has some dementia issues that are popping up or Alzheimer's or perhaps there's been a diagnosis that's terminal? How does that change the financial plan? All that causes us to take a step back and recognize that financial plans are not just simply returns. And so as you go forward in America today and you're doing your own financial planning, make sure that you educate yourself. Make sure that you have surrounded yourself with people who know what they're doing and have had experience with this, with people who know how to do beneficiary forms and people who understand estate planning documents. This isn't a time just to think you can go it on your own. This is a time to take a step back and recognize that there are some things you can control, some things you can't control, some things that you're making one-time decisions about, and other things that when you make those decisions, you have the opportunity to change later. So in our program today, we're going to talk about a couple of these things that once you make those decisions, you're pretty much in them. One of them is Medicare, and the other one is Social Security. So when we come back, we're going to talk to Josh Norris from Comprehensive Financial about what people need to be thinking about when it comes to Medicare in 2022. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. This is Doug Hughes live in studio. And joining me is Mr. Josh Norris, the Medicare expert in our office, and has been doing this kind of planning for quite some time, helping people navigate through this very difficult to understand landscape, and that's healthcare. And it's not just healthcare. Of course, Josh worked with healthcare prior to retirement, but you know, talking about healthcare when people go into retirement and that special word, that special title, Medicare. So, Josh, thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Give us some updates on Medicare for 2022.
Sure. Yeah. Well, there's a few changes. The premium jumped up a decent amount compared to what it's jumped up in the past. It's up to $170 now a month. That was a pretty good jump from $148 just last year. And the Part B deductible went up to $233. So those were some of the main changes, pretty much that happened with Medicare. They're talking about maybe doing some new stuff in the future and adding some stuff, but so far there's those talks. But those are the changes, the premium and the Part B deductible.
Gotcha. And Josh, you know, we asked this question, and I guess when you're in the line of work that you are working with Medicare people, you get asked this question all the time, but when do people need to file? When do they need to sign up? Because it's a question we get over and over again.
I know. Well, it depends. It's not a one-size-fits-all type of thing. So, you know, if somebody is receiving their Social Security benefit before age 65, they're going to be automatically enrolled in Medicare, so they really don't have to do anything. That's if, once again, they're already taking their Social Security benefit. Now, if they're working, you know, into age 65 and maybe later, typically what you want to do is about a 3-month rule. You want to, when you know your coverage is going to end through your employer or your spouse's employer, that's kind of when you want to get the ball rolling and getting ready to transition over to Medicare from your group plan. So I'd say probably 3 months before you know you're going to retire and lose your benefits.
Okay.
So good.
Very good. Very good. And people pay this just out of their Social Security distribution. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. This comes directly out. So if you know, there's most people when they go on Medicare, they start taking their Social Security benefit. So yes, the premium gets deducted from that benefit. They never even see it. You know, whatever their, you know, if their benefit is $1,500 a month, then, you know, before it hits their bank account, it's going to be $170 less. So they'll take care of that. If somebody, there are cases where people hold off as long as possible to age 70. In that case, you can pay it by bill quarterly, or you can set up an auto pay to have it come out of a checking account every month.
Gotcha. All right, Josh. One other thing that we always ask when we have you come on here, can you give us just a random example of a success that you were able to help someone with in 2021 when it came to Medicare? Was there someone that comes to mind who didn't have, the right Medicare plan, and you were able to come in and help them, or maybe someone was confused and you were able to shed some light on what they had and what they were doing?
Yeah, I can't really think of one particular time, but, you know, just what I see oftentimes there's just so much information out there. And there's so much stuff that gets thrown at, you know, people who are soon to be 65 and in that Medicare age range. They just get overwhelmed and they do hear, and there is different stuff, you know, that people, there's misconceptions with the rules and all that stuff. So I think, you know, one of the things that I really take pleasure in is just kind of clearing getting the clutter all out of their eyes and minds and helping them just simply understand it in a simple way. You know, you don't have to necessarily go into every single detail, the nuts and bolts, but just so that they, you know, the main goal is that they understand essentially what they have. Because I think that's, you know, a lot of times, you know, I have met with people in the past where they enrolled into a plan or something and they just were, there was misconceptions. They didn't totally understand how it works. and they thought it was, it thought it would do something, you know, it had certain coverages, but it didn't. So I think that's the big thing, is just helping people realize what they have and what it does and what it doesn't do. That's kind of, and then obviously, you know, one of the best things is to hear is, you know, hey, you made that really easy. So that's kind of my main goal there, to make sure people get set up with the right plan, but then also it's just easy. It's not like a huge burden on them.
Gotcha. Josh, let's pivot, and I just have one more question for you. And this isn't necessarily a question, more than it is just a statement. Tell us a little bit about the HSA. You know, these things are around. We find them to be very useful tools. How does an HSA work with healthcare in retirement?
That's a great question. You know, one of the biggest misconceptions I see out there is, a lot of people believe this in HR, you know, people in HR even, that they think that once you turn age 65, like say you're still working, and once you turn age 65, you can't contribute to an HSA anymore. And that's not true. The rule is you can't be enrolled in any part of Medicare. So you can, if you know, that's one question I always ask people, if they're continuing to work past age 65, I always ask them, you know, hey, you know, they ask me, should I enroll in Medicare? The first question I ask, well, are you contributing to an HSA? And if they say yes, I say, no, don't touch Medicare. Don't worry about Medicare until later down the road when you retire. And then that's when you'll go on it. So that's a huge misconception. I've met people that have stopped contributing to their HSA because they got that bad information and weren't able to take advantage of putting that money away in those last few years of work, which is a huge deal because, you know, it's the trifecta. You know, it's the tax deductible. You know, it goes in tax deferred, it grows tax deferred, and then later you can use it, you know, without being taxed on the appropriate medical cost. So the HSA is a huge benefit. I always, you know, if I can get in front of, whenever I get in front of somebody who's, you know, has 10 years left of work or, you know, somewhere in that range, I always encourage them, hey, if you can do HSA, you know, just do as much as you can, because that'll create their little health insurance piggy bank when they do retire. So
Sounds great. Well, Josh, as you know, healthcare is one of the most expensive parts of retirement. David talks a lot about taxes being the most expensive thing, and they probably are. But boy, healthcare is a pretty big expense, and people need to humbly and soberly assess how they do their healthcare in retirement. Very, very important information. Josh Norris from Comprehensive Financial. Listen, folks, if you have questions about Medicare, if you just need to get some information, if you need to sign up, if you're evaluating your retirement and healthcare is one of the biggest questions that you have, give Josh a call at the office, 812-334-3190, and he will be happy to sit down with you and go over your options and make those more complicated things very simple. Josh, thank you again for being with us. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. This is Doug Hughes live in studio. Your Money with David Hayes is brought to you by Unrivaled Electric. It's your full-service electrical contractor specializing in generators and solar arrays. Veteran-owned Unrivaled Electric wants to be your electrician. Call them at 812-361-3604, or you can find them on Facebook. That's Unrivaled Electric. This is Doug Hughes. Again, I'm live in studio, and I've been joined by phone by these great guests today, and we have someone who is no stranger to the show or to the radio station, Mr. Rod Holloway. Rod, how are you doing this afternoon?
Hey, Doug. I'm doing well on this rainy afternoon, just hoping that it stays rain and it doesn't turn to ice or snow.
Absolutely, absolutely. Rod, we know that you anchor down the chair there for equities and also asset allocation at Comprehensive Financial Institutional. And you're on here frequently talking to us about the markets and what's going on. So I'll just ask you a general question. What's going on in the markets this week?
Sure. It's a couple of things. Obviously, the Fed and inflation are probably the biggest component of it. No doubt that Russia and Ukraine are adding to the uneasiness of the market. I don't think that's the primary aspect of it, because there were rumors that Wednesday was the magic invasion day, and Wednesday came and went, and we didn't get a rally when Russia didn't invade. Now, that also did not mean that because they didn't do it on Wednesday that there is still not tension and potential invasion to happen at some point in the future. But if all of the angst was really about them getting ready to do it this week, you would have expected a little bit of a relief rally. I really think that the bulk of this, well, like I said, not that Russia and Ukraine and that uncertainty doesn't add to the anxiety of the market, it's really coming down to inflation and the Fed. And more the market, you can tell, is fearful that the Fed most certainly let interest rates stay low for too long. They wanted to get inflation a little bit hot. They didn't want it to get as hot as it got, but they did want it to run a little bit hotter than normal before they attempted to control it. And now they want to attempt to control it, and the fear out of the marketplace is that they're going to too aggressively attack it, and what they're really going to do is stamp out growth. So let's be honest about what the Fed is really attempting to do when they raise interest rates to control inflation. It is to reduce demand, and if you reduce demand enough, you eliminate growth. So they don't call it a demand or a growth reduction. They just talk about taking some liquidity out of the marketplace. But Doug, you and I have spoke about the inflation issue a fair amount from the standpoint there are certain components as an influence in the inflation world right now that the Fed and interest rates just cannot have an impact on or control. So if they too aggressively attempt to control that without acknowledging and recognizing certain components of that, will just have to be resolved within that particular private sector itself, be it energy, be it in the logistics area of low supplies getting through, then the Fed is going to actually stamp out any growth and opportunities we have of moving beyond. And that seems to be where the market, not that the market is settled, that's what the Fed's going to do. But there's no doubt that the added nervousness has to be more around the fact that they think the Fed is going to make a mistake by overly aggressively increasing rates, more so than the market is fearful of this first rate increase coming in March. I've said it many times on Glass's show, we're at 0% federal funds rate. If we go to 0.25, or even if they do a 50 basis point increase and we go to 0.5% in March, you are still at historically low interest rates, and that should not be prohibitive to growth. So the market's not fearful of the March increase. It's much more fearful of the pace of these increases, as we have gone from an expectation of only having two increases in 2022 to now some forecasting seven increases in 2022.
Wow, it seems like a lot of headlines to digest there, Rod, when we look around. And there are some people who are calling it just kind of a tension trade, meaning gold is up, treasuries are up, oil is a little bit down this morning. I'm not sure where it's at right now. And this kind of a tension trade over the Russian potential invasion of Ukraine. And then we have these rate hikes, and it's a lot of headline to digest there. But let's move to another subject, which I know you follow very closely. Tell us about earnings. I mean, you know, that's a topic we has it. I know you've talked about it, but as I watch the news media and I read through different things, I don't hear hear as many conversations of people just talking about earnings. What do earnings look like this year?
Yeah, earnings have been solid, and I haven't seen where we're scored at or with this week included. But as of last week, we were running at about a 75-76% of companies who had reported had beat. And I think the average beat was by about 8%. So that's a pretty solid earnings cycle. There is no doubt that the companies who didn't beat, or in some cases only matched expectations, haven't performed very well after their earnings release. Some companies who had very strong earnings but yet didn't talk very positively about the future have been hammered. And then even some of the tech-oriented companies that have had great earnings and even spoke positively about the future have been sold off, and a lot of the sell-off within the tech-slash-growth world comes down to the fact that the media continues to tell us over and over and over that rising interest rates is a bad environment for growth stocks. And there is some truth to that. It's not as though that is just a complete made-up thought. There is some truth to it. But as I mentioned just a little bit ago, we're talking about federal funds rate of zero. And if we go to 0.25 or 0.5, that is not highly restrictive to growth stocks. Now, the further they rise, the more restrictive it becomes. But there has also got to be a difference between growth. Not all growth is created equal. Some growth companies are very large with very large free cash flow on an annual basis. They can afford to fund their growth if they need to without tapping into the capital markets. It's some of the smaller, newer, upcoming growth companies that don't have as much cash flow and are still needing to tap into the capital markets to fund their growth opportunities. Those are the companies that get hurt the most when interest rates begin to rise, because they don't have that free cash flow to use cash to invest in their growth opportunities. They need to issue stock, issue bonds, or go to the bank and borrow dollars.
Absolutely. Rod, let's talk about one last thing. And you and I actually just spoke about this before I came up here to the studio. A lot of people are beginning to talk once again about international. And of course, we don't necessarily make a bet that you should or shouldn't all in or all out. Probably not a bad idea to have some exposure, but a complete pendulum swing from domestic to, you know, international probably isn't appropriate. But what's the attraction and what's the fascination right now with international? We seem to hear a lot about that these days.
Yeah, sure, most certainly. Well, the fascination is the valuations of the international companies, and they're low, and they're compellingly low. The problem is they've been compellingly low for 10 to 15 years, and you tend to stay low in valuations if you don't actually have some meaningful growth. And that's what the international market, especially Europe, more so than maybe Asia, has been saddled with is, yep, companies look good valuation-wise. They obviously have put the financial crisis of 2008, which was global, behind them. They're in a similar boat from the pandemic perspective as we are, in which their numbers are starting to roll over and go down, and they're thinking they're closer to the end of this than the beginning, just like we're beginning to think over here. But we still don't necessarily see rapid growth going on within the economies of Europe. So just cheap valuations by themselves isn't a compelling reason for stocks to start going up meaningfully unless there is growth to push them up behind that. So as you said, that doesn't mean we're not saying international has no place in your portfolio whatsoever and that you shouldn't have exposure. We're just basically talking to our people and cautioning them against the mainstream media and the mutual fund industry is really pushing this. But they also pushed it 5 or 6 years ago for 2 or 3 years straight, and they eventually gave up because it didn't pan out. So the advisors who followed their advice and started pushing a lot of dollars out of the U.S. into the international market weren't very pleased with the performance they got in international, especially when they compared it to what they sold to go internationally and how that performance was. It far outperformed them. The reality is we're in such a global world. You can probably achieve similar performance numbers by owning a diversified basket of large global U.S. companies that will reap the rewards if the international marketplace is doing well. And you don't necessarily have to be exclusive to just international funds that don't have a place here in the U.S. Once again, I'm not suggesting if that is where your allocation is at as a pure international fund, that you should rethink it or get rid of it. I'm just only suggesting that you may not have to meet the performance bogey that you need to achieve the objective you're after by having your dollars exposed internationally. You may be able to get to that objective with your dollars exposed domestically in a well-balanced, diversified portfolio, because a lot of the large cap companies right here in the United States, they're doing business all around the world. And if things are going well in Europe or Asia, they're probably receiving some of those benefits as well.
Absolutely. Rod, thank you, as always, for coming on the show and giving us some insight. Any last word you'd have for our listeners out there that are watching their statements? They just got their January statement, and now here we are in the middle of February, and it's been a pretty volatile 6 or 7 weeks here. Any last word you'd have for anyone out there?
You know, I think the biggest thing is no one understands what the different allocations are for. And your growth allocation, your equity allocation should be for long-term time horizons, and you don't need that money for a while. So don't overanalyze what the growth portion of your portfolio does daily, weekly, monthly, even quarterly. Those are dollars that should be allocated and not needed for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. So you want to evaluate how they're doing in much longer time horizons than necessarily every month's statement that you get. But it is important to evaluate, do you have the appropriate allocation from a risk perspective? And the easiest time to do that is when you run into some trouble like we have, in which January was a negative month. February is currently negative as well, because most people don't feel as though they're overexposed to the more risky side when things are doing nothing but going up like they did last year. That's the time that most people feel as though they can handle the risk. It's when they begin to see their statements go down a little bit that they really can assess what is the true risk tolerance of where I feel most comfortable being. That's probably the most important thing that they should be analyzing right now.
Great, great word, Rod. Thank you so much for being with us. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. This is Doug Hughes live in studio. Your Money with David Hayes is brought to you by the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance Like at the Like Law Group at 812-323-8300. And as promised, Mr. Wayne Thacker is joining us by phone. Wayne, I was so glad when you said you wanted to be on the program this week to talk about one of the subjects that's most near and dear to your heart, which is Social Security planning. We talked earlier in the program about income planning versus income guessing. And the majority of people, Wayne, out here that are going into retirement are just making some pretty general guesses that the market's going to go up by 8 and they're going to withdraw 4 or 5 and everything is going to be just fine, which does work in decades like the last decade we'd had. But what we like to do is take a step back and do some income planning versus income guessing. And the hallmark or the foundation of most people's retirement is Social Security. So want to get some updates from you on Social Security. I know you've talked about it here on the program before. But when it comes to Social Security claiming strategies, listen, we know that you can take it at 62 at a reduced rate. You can go to your full retirement age, which is 66 or 67, or you can let it accumulate up to 70. Can you describe a couple of differences between those ages for us?
Doug, that's a great question. First of all, thanks for having me on the show. David never invites me to come on anymore, and so I'm happy to get this opportunity to come on and chat with you. The biggest change with Social Security in a positive way this year was the 5.9% inflation increase. And Doug, as we've talked about in the past, you just mentioned the age, the claiming ages, 62, 67, 70. I think most people know the longer you wait to claim your benefit, the higher the starting amount is. Well, Doug, this is the advantage of waiting longer to take your Social Security. If it starts out higher in a year like this, when you get a 5.9% increase, that's 5.9% on that higher amount. So this is one of the keys that we've talked about in our programs for the last dozen years. Waiting to claim Social Security at a later date will also net you larger pay raises, if you will, not income guessing, but a guaranteed increase in pay over the course of your lifetime by waiting to claim Social Security the first time, as long as you possibly can, it will guarantee higher pay raises in the future. Like this year, we had a pretty significant 5.9% increase.
And Wayne, we know that it's easy now to go and create your own account at ssa.gov, and we encourage everyone to do that. And they can get pretty close to an accurate estimate on what their Social Security is going to be if an individual would do that, won't they?
Doug, one of the things that the Social Security has done a great job of actually, if you haven't logged into your account in the last, let's call it 6 months or longer, the Social Security site has been greatly improved. You can actually go in now and pick a day that you want to claim Social Security, and it will give you an amount. In the past, you've always gotten these years that you just mentioned, Doug, 62 or 66 or 70. But now you can actually go in and see, you know, what happens if I wait a month? What happens if I wait 8 months? What happens if I wait a year and 7 months? And you can actually go in now and use the slider on the Social Security website and see by, you know, waiting a half a year, 7 months, what the difference in monthly income will be on your Social Security website. And you do need to go in and create a My Social Security account to be able to have that option open to you.
Good deal. Wayne, let me, I want to ask you one real quick question, then we want to get to a success story. We don't have, as you know, a lot of time, but, you know, sometimes people just do hearsay Social Security planning. They've heard someone say this, or they knew someone that did that. And here's one that comes up very often. And we hear this statement from people: I'm just going to claim half of my husband's, or I'm just going to claim half of my wife's. What does that mean? How do people claim half of their spouse's Social Security?
Well, so specifically for a spousal situation, Doug, and this could even be maybe you were a spouse, maybe you've been widowed, maybe you're divorced, or you're currently married. So this is going to pertain to all three of those categories with slightly different rules, especially for widows. You are pretty much guaranteed to receive at least half of the amount that your spouse or former spouse was able to receive. So as an example, Doug, if you've got, there are still people that had maybe lower earnings than their spouse, maybe very little to no earnings, and their spouse has been the breadwinner. So I'll give you an example here. Let's just say that, Doug, you turned on your Social Security, and it is $2,000 a month. And Terry, let's say she didn't have many earnings outside of the house, so let's say her own benefit is only $600 a month. What Social Security will do is they will bump that spouse up to at least half of the other spouse. So Terry could then get a spousal benefit that would be equal to or bring her up to half of your benefit in that example, Doug. So that's what a spousal benefit is. In the past, there were some spousal claiming strategies that you could that a higher spouse, for instance, could claim on the lower spouse's Social Security benefit while waiting and delaying taking their own maximized benefit all the way to age 70. A lot of those rules have gone away. They rewrote those rules a few years ago. So those old rules now only apply to people born before 1954. So if you are 68 or 69 years old out there, there are still some old grandfathered rules that you could potentially be eligible for. And if you haven't reviewed those, it'd be a great time to give us a call and let's walk over your scenario individually.
You know, Wayne, you bring up a great point. There's so many people who just, like I said, do hearsay Social Security planning. They heard someone say it, or they met someone who did this way or that way. But I tell you, one of the things that I've learned in working with you over the years and really studying this Social Security is really this isn't something, it seems like it should be so simple, right? I mean, you choose the day and you know what's coming. But the reality is it's a part of a bigger plan. And you've had some great success with Social Security strategy planning. Give us one success before we let you go.
Well, Doug, we're going to talk about just how complicated this can be with my success story. So I just had someone retire from the school system. Their spouse is 69, still working. My school system retiree applied for Social Security benefits. The older spouse, still working, plans to work past age 70, had no idea that there was a spousal benefit that they qualified for just based on their spouse's Social Security benefit. So we were able to turn on another income stream. Now, in this case, you know, it's an extra $700-$800 a month, Doug, but that's $700 or $800 a month for the next almost year. And then this person also did not know that they could start taking their own Social Security at 70 and still work. They had planned on just working and when they retired at 72, 73, 74, then turn on their Social Security. But we talked about not waiting past 70. The benefit doesn't grow. And if you don't claim it, you're literally just giving that money away once you reach beyond the age of 70. So that was a success story. We've created some more cash flow, if you will, for the household that can be saved for future retirement spending and maybe pass on to other generations.
That's terrific, Wayne. And again, we just want to say it as loudly as we can. If you have been employed and you're an American, there is a Social Security distribution available to you out there. But it just really takes some good analysis and figuring out how it works in your overall financial plan. Wayne, thank you so much for being with us, and we will talk to you very soon.
Doug, my pleasure. Thank you again for the invite.
You're welcome. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Well, here we are at the end of another great show of Your Money with David Hayes, featuring the different people who work at Comprehensive Financial Consultants and Comprehensive Financial Consultants Institutional. We had Rod Holloway on to talk to us about the equity markets and the stock markets and what's going on, the headline news, and what we and he are seeing around in the markets. We had Josh Norris on to talk to us about Medicare planning and who needs to be planning at what time, and also a little bit about HSAs. And then a really good segment with Mr. Wayne Thacker talking about Social Security planning. At the beginning, we talked a little bit about having conversations with family about financial planning and about your estate and about how things are going. These are all subjects that you need to be paying attention to. This the world has changed, and the traditional view of retirement where you just work somewhere and had guaranteed pension, guaranteed Social Security, and life was very easy, that has changed. It changed about 40 years ago, and now the burden is on you to determine a savings rate to be and allocations that you remain invested in and to create income streams and cash flow that are going to maintain you for your retirement. That's what we do at Comprehensive Financial. Please feel free to give us a call. If you didn't get to listen to the program in its entirety this evening, then you can always tune in for Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. This is Your Money with David Hayes.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.